So let me start with some motivation, which comes from so-called non-commutative algebraic geometry. So in algebraic geometry, we have this correspondence between algebra and geometry. So when we have an algebra, say we work over some field K, when we have an algebra A, there's an associated space spec A, and then it generalizes to schemes, and a scheme is equipped with a structure sheaf. And then, commutative. These are commutative algebras, sheaves of commutative rings. And if you want to do something similar in a non-commutative world, then, it's well known. That there's all kinds of problems if one wants to define a spectrum for an arbitrary non-commutative algebra. And so also on the second line, it's not clear what a non-commutative scheme is. But so one way to go from commutative to non-commutative objects is by deformation. So what we would like to do is use deformations to go from here to there. And then, at least for algebra, there exists a deformation theory which has been developed by Hertz and others. So let's say we look at some Artin local ring over K, then an R deformation of A is going to be an R algebra A and an isomorphism like this. And this deformation theory is controlled by Hochschild cohomology. So maybe I should add a column cohomology here. And so, the Hochschild cohomology of an algebra can be expressed as X groups of bimodules, but it's really the Hochschild complex. It's really the explicit complex with where the multiplication of A lives in second degree, with all its extra structure on this complex that controls the deformation theory. So this X group is not so important. But on the other hand, for a scheme, there exists something analogous. So there is a definition of Hochschild cohomology for a scheme, which has been considered by various authors. By Swan, Yekutieli, Konsevich, which is this one. So we look at an X over the product scheme. It's not immediately clear what it means in terms of deformation. So this doesn't quite tell us how we should deform a scheme. Now, if we make things a little more general, we can put ring spaces here. So ring space is then just a sheaf of K algebras on a topological space, or maybe on something more general like a site. But then Gerstenhaber and Schack have defined cohomology. If we forget for a second about the topology, so if we had just a sheaf of algebras on X, a pre-sheaf of algebras, then they look at the following X and following X groups, and so this is quite different. I mean, this tensor product of pre-sheaves lives over the same space X, so we didn't change our space. But of course, since this doesn't make use of the topology, so it's an X in the category of pre-sheaves of modules, this isn't going to be the right thing to deform our ring space, but it could be the correct thing to deform pre-sheaves, of course. And so what happens? We could. Yeah, for a pre-sheaf, there's also something very similar for a pre-sheaf, right? So we just start with our pre-sheaf O, then we could say, okay, a deformation will be a pre-sheaf of R algebras together with an isomorphism here, obtained by just pointwise tensoring everything inside with K. So question, does this deformation theory correspond to this cohomology? And I mean, we will get the answer later in the talk. But this gives us some hope to be able to put something here. So because here, of course, there's no problem in considering sheaves of non-commutative algebras over a topological space. And so then the question would be, okay, which ones of them can be considered as schemes? And so we want to look at deformations. But at this point we're kind of stuck because we don't know what to do with the topology. And so it's time to introduce a new feature, and this will be the following. If in algebraic geometry these objects are really studied through associated categories of sheaves, and so I will, I've been writing a bit too big, but I want to consider three sizes of categories, really. So big ones, smaller ones. Yes, so okay, this is going all wrong. So big ones, smaller ones. So for a ringed space, over a ringed space, I want to consider here the category of sheaves of modules. Sheaves of modules over the ring space, and maybe for a scheme, I would prefer to look at something smaller like quasi-coherent sheaves. And if the scheme is nice enough, maybe even at coherent sheaves. And then, of course, for the algebra, here, this will just be the same thing as the category of modules over my algebra A, and here we get some finitely presented modules. So we've made progress because at least now, at least on the first line, we can copy this. We can study a non-commutative algebra through its module category, which should be over here. But we're still left with question marks here, and here again there's no problem in considering sheaves over a non-commutative pre-sheaf. So now what we want to do is we want to replace these question marks by certain abelian categories. So we want to think of certain abelian categories as non-commutative schemes. And so now maybe we can take this philosophy one step further and really try and think of an abelian category as the primary object of study in non-commutative geometry. And so on the third board, I will make a non-commutative spaces. This is non-commutative spaces 1. This is non-commutative spaces 2. So I want to take categories as the starting point. So we have algebra, geometry, categories. Yes. So how does it work? So most of these categories, the big ones, if the spaces are nice, the big categories will not be arbitrary abelian categories, they will be Schrödinger categories. And so let me take as a first object a Schrödinger category. Then my Schrödinger category, I want to look at it as being something very big. And how can I associate something over there with this category? Well, maybe generalizing the Gabriel Popescu theorem, we can look at small k linear categories which get mapped into C in an appropriate sense, so small generating categories. And then this C and the collections of epimorphic families in C will endow this linear category with an additive Grothendieck topology. So if we, and then C will actually be a category of additive sheaves on this small linear category U. So you can think of just a generator of C, just a generated one. The anamorphism algebra of one generator will do. And then C will really be a category of additive sheaves with regard to this additive topology. Okay. How about smaller categories? These categories. So if we start with a small abelian category, then let us make it very small. Then we can enlarge it by considering its category of int objects over C, which will be the int completion, which will be a Grothendieck category. And in fact, this is the same thing as putting C here, endowing it with the additive topology of C epimorphisms, and then constructing mod T, TC over C here. So these categories are equivalent. So it's not clear if you should think of them as more like quasi-coherent sheaves or more like all sheaves, but this is the situation. But now it looks as though on this side we have linear categories. We have linear categories, we don't have sheaves of algebras. But is this really so? I mean, if we put here our category mod O, this mod O, if we put it here, then what can we do to work out the program of the first line? Well, we could produce such a small category U, which really comes from this data. So we define U with as objects the opens of X, and we put U, V, U equal to either O of V, if V is contained in U, or zero else. Yes? And then this will be a good U here, and And the topology we're going to find on it will be obtained directly from the topology of this topological space X. So we can say that this is really a pre-sheaf, in disguise. And we'll say more about this later. So it's not like the geometry is lost, it's hidden in these additive categories now. So that's the setup. So now I've made advertisements for a billion categories. So now I should prove to you that one can do something with them in this context. So the plan is, I should tell you how to deform a billion categories to fill in these question marks. So how can one deform a billion categories? Formation of a billion. So the only example, the only thing we have and of which we're really sure that it's the correct thing is this deformation theory for algebras. And so what one wants is that if we have this algebra deformation over here, then looking just at module categories, this thing should be a deformation of a billion categories. And so how can we arrive there? Well, let's look at categories, R linear categories here, K linear categories down here. We have a forgetful functor. What we do to deform algebras, we use this left adjoint, which tensors by K. But for these large abelian categories, this is clearly not a correct thing. What we should use is the other adjoint, which is, so yes, this is an R. We should consider the hom of K into the abelian category. So if we have our R linear abelian category here, we should reduce it to hom KC, where this hom is an hom of is functors from K into C. So what do these functors do? They pick an object in C and endow it with a K-linear structure. So especially in our situation there, where this ring nut has an ill-potent kernel, this hom will just pick out all the objects that get annihilated by this kernel. So we should think of a deformation of an abelian category as we should think of an abelian category as sitting inside its deformation. Right, and so this definition this works, and this is joint work with Michel Vandenberg. And so we developed this theory and studied Hochschild cohomology for abelian categories, which can be done. But so now, what I should tell you is, so we've constructed this definition so that an algebra deformation gives an abelian deformation of module categories, but it's not quite clear that if we start with a module category and we study its deformations, whether they will all be of this shape. And so, yes, you need flatness. Yes, so, I mean, I thank you for bringing this issue up. So everything needs flatness. So flatness for algebras is just the classical flatness, but we need a new notion of flatness for abelian categories, which will be such that an algebra is flat precisely when its module category is flat. And so I will, in all my talk, I will ignore this important point, but so you need this all the time, of course. Yes, thank you. Yes, so let's start with mod A and look at such a deformation. Then what will be our strategy to prove that this deformation is going to be some kind of mod A bar? Well, we look at A as sitting inside mod A, and then for these deformations, so actually here we get another picture with two adjoints. So the category sits inside its deformation, and there are two adjoints mapping objects down to the base category, and so they are also given by a tensor product and a HOM, this time working on objects. And so to lift this projective A, we're going to use this left adjoint, and then this lift, this deformation theory for the object A, is controlled by an obstruction theory. So, and this obstruction theory will be in terms of self X of A. So, X, the first and the second. And yes, of course, so this obstruction theory then tells us that, yes, everything is zero. So we find a unique up to isomorphism lift A bar in this deformed category. And now, since the inclusion of A in mod A, this Yoneda embedding, this has an intrinsic characterization, right? This is a fully faithful map, and A is a finitely presented projective generator. So if we can lift these three properties together under deformation using the nilpotency we have, then we're done. And so this works, so one can show that actually C is now equivalent to mod A bar. And so the plan is that we would really like to be able to do something similar for these other abelian categories that we have over there, so the categories of sheaves and quasi-coherent sheaves. So let's look at how the situation changes. If we have mod O, so I'll start with the most general. So we start with the ring space. We have some deformation of mod O, and here, we look at a structure sheaf. Again, the obstruction theory is controlled by these X, but of course, in general, they won't vanish. And so there's, for a general ringed space, there's no reason why the structure sheaf would lift. And so this is a problem. But then on the other hand, the situation is not so bad. Well, it's not so bad if we change from mod O to the entire stack, I will denote it, round mod O, of this module category together with all the localizations on open subsets. So this big mod O is just defined by mod O of U will be sheaves of modules on O restricted to the open U. And then we get, this is a stack of abelian categories, or maybe, yes, I learned that I should call this a pile, maybe. But I'll call it a stack. It's a stack of abelian categories, and then we want to look at O together with all these restrictions OU. And then in this stack, the object O, so which lives on the degree, which lives on level X, this object O still has a nice property. It's not it's not projective in mode O, but it's locally projective in this stack. So what do I mean? Or what does this mean? So O is locally projective in a stack mod O. So yes, I want to look at an epimorphism from some sheaf into O. And then, yes, I mean by the definition of an epimorphism of sheaves, yeah, we can look at one in O of X, and then by definition of epimorphism of sheaves on some cover of X, this one will be reached, right? So, and then of course I can use this one to produce local splittings of this map. So I can produce splittings of these epimorphisms locally. So so O is locally projective, and what does this mean? Yes, I've erased this X. But what this will mean for the obstruction theory is that, for example, we have an obstruction against lifting living in X2, but locally this obstruction is gonna vanish. So we'll find a cover of X where we can lift the OU. And the same for unicity. So where does that bring us? This means that it makes sense to define O bar as a pre-stack sitting inside this stack round mod O. We define O bar of U to be, yes, again, we always, also for objects we need flatness, of course. So lifts, I mean flat lifts of O U to, and then I forgot to tell you something. I forgot to tell you that here, if we have such a deformation, if we have this, of course I should have erased this. If we have such a deformation and we look at a localization like mod OU, here we have a localization, then one can always, in the deformation theory of abelian categories, induce this deformation on the localization and then get a new localization here. So actually we've deformed our abelian category mod O, but automatically we've deformed the entire stack of abelian categories. So we get a stack of abelian categories. Maybe I should denote this CX. So then C will be a stack of abelian categories deforming mod O. And so I put O bar of U, the lifts of O U, to C U, I said. Well, I don't know why. To C U, okay. So this is, and this object is not just an arbitrary pre-stack. This will be an algebraic pre-stack. And so what does algebraic mean? So an algebraic, this notion has been introduced by Konsevich in the context of algebraic deformation quantization. An algebraic is just a linear category, so a K-linear category, non-empty linear category in which all objects are isomorphic. Yes, so this is some kind of an algebra version of a groupoid. And now an algebraoid pre-stack will be something that looks locally like a pre-stack of algebraoids. That is connectedness. Yes, I mean if you yes. So if you only look at the isomorphisms in your category, you'll get a groupoid, really. Yes. And so for the notion of an algebraoid pre-stack, we get a non-emptiness, meaning that yes. So there should be some cover of X. So let's say yes, a pre-stack A. A is algebraic if it is locally non-empty. So there is a cover for which the A of U I are non-empty, and it is locally connected. So for two objects in A of U, there is a cover such that the restrictions to this cover become isomorphic. And so yes, so O bar is an algebraic pre-stack. And now I want to see this as a deformation of my original sheaf of algebras O. So of course a sheaf of algebras can trivially be considered as an algebraic pre-stack. It just has one object on every level. So it certainly satisfies these conditions. And so then the question is, in what sense is O bar going to be a deformation of O? And in fact, this is a bit... Yes, I don't know what it is, but the thing is that these objects are really pre-stacks and not stacks. I mean, a sheaf of algebras is a pre-stack. It's that it satisfies the sheaf property, means that it satisfies the gluing property for morphisms, but it doesn't satisfy the gluing property for objects. So that's why it's called pre-stack. This deformation will be in a stackified sense. So O bar is a deformation of O as algebraic three stacks. When we tensor O bar by K, oh, that sounds very stupid. When we tensor O bar by K, we're gonna get, so this was not a stack, this is not a stack, but even if this is a stack, tensoring ruins the property of being a stack, so it doesn't matter all that much, but we have to stackify this here, and then this has to be equivalent as stacks to the stackification of O. So it's a deformation theory up to stackification for pre-stacks. I don't know what is the nicest way to formulate this, but in any case, so this is how we look at it. And the next thing is that we still have to interpret we still have to interpret this deformation C of X we started with. So we started with this deformation C of X. We've associated a stack of abelian categories. Now we've associated this pre-stack of algebroids. But what does this pre-stack of algebroids have to do with C of X? Well, what's going to happen is some kind of a maybe local version of what happened to the in the case of modules over an algebra. So what we're going to prove is that actually this deformed stack of abelian categories. So theorem, maybe I should write a few points. So theorem, O bar is an algebraic pre-stack. Deforming O. And secondly, C is going to be equivalent to the stack round mod over O bar. So the stack of sheaves of modules on this pre-stack. So yes, maybe I can note that, yes, for these deformations, algebroidness lifts automatically. You can use nilpotency to lift algebroidness. So it's a deformation theory for pre-stacks, if you like. And the algebroidness comes automatically. So this is what I want to prove. And what do I need to prove such a result? An equivalence of stacks. Yeah. Of stacks. So what I need for this is some kind of an intrinsic characterization of this object, more precisely of the way O bar sits inside this object. So I mean, we have some kind of Yoneda embedding for stacks where the pre-stack sits inside its stack of sheaves of module categories. But how about if we have a map from some pre-stack into some stack which resembles mod O bar sufficiently. So what have we got in the situation of mod O bar? Let's think about O for a second. So we have some mod O U and then restriction maps to mod O V for V sitting inside U, and these restriction maps have two adjoints. So if this is the inclusion, we have this restriction I upper star, there's a right adjoint I lower star, and there's a left adjoint I lower shriek, and they have nice exactness properties, and this is a localization in particular. This is a localization, and so if this stack really resembles mod O enough in this sense, and we have a map from pre-stack into C, when will this yield such an equivalence? All right. And we, in fact, we've already seen a part of it earlier on. So I said, O is not a projective object in mod O, but O is a locally projective object in the stack. So somehow we want to say something like O has to be some kind of locally projective and locally finitely generated generators, although it's not clear what this means, generators in C. But it's slightly more subtle than that to get a true analogy. So maybe I have time. I think I have time to explain how the proof goes, more or less. What the essential ingredient in the proof is the use of these additive topologies I put here. So these additive topologies, when we look at the Yoneda embedding of A into mod A, then this is a Grothendieck category. It we can carry out the first line there and induce an additive topology on A such that this Grothendieck category will be the sheaves with respect to this topology. And then yes, in this situation, of course, this topology will have to be trivial, because here the localization is going to be the entire category of modules. So mod A is going to be the same thing as mod T A, and the topology we're going to get on A is going to be the trivial topology, meaning that all the coverings already contain the identity on A, really. And so it's very easy to see this from the point of view of this characterization in terms of a projective finitely generated generators, because, so I said, what characterized this Yoneda embedding was that this was a projective finitely presented generator. So supposing that this is the case, how are we gonna make this topology? So what we have to do to make this topology, we have to know what is a covering of A. So when does a family of maps to A, so these are just elements of my algebra A, it's just the situation where everything collapses to one object, but so I think of the elements of A as morphisms. So when is a collection of morphisms gonna cover A? By definition, if this is gonna be an epimorphism in this category C, yes? That's how these additive topologies work, just like Grothendieck topologies in the set theoretic case. So what I really want to do is I want to think of these Grothendieck categories as additive topoi, if you like. When is this going to be? Is this going to be an epi? Well, okay, because A is projective, the map is going to split, and because A is finitely presented, it's going to split through a finite sub-coproduct here. And so actually, we've now written the identity of A as a finite sum of morphisms in my covering. So I've proven that if A is projective finitely presented generator, then indeed my topology is going to be trivial. All the coverings are going to contain identity. So we knew this, of course, but I just wanted to illustrate how it works. because it works in the same way in our new situation. It works in the same way. So we can put as a characterization of the Yoneda embedding. We can say, okay, A or U to C, yeah, it has to induce a localization. So it has to induce a localization. C has to become a localization of mod U. That's saying that that's possible because it's a Grothendieck category. And then secondly, the topology induced on U has to be the trivial topology. So this is one way of looking at it. And in this situation, what am I going to do with my pre-stack O bar? I've already did this with the pre-sheaf O. I defined this category U, this additivization. Now, what is this additivization? Now that we're thinking about pre-stacks, we understand this because, I mean, this is just the classical correspondence of going from a pseudo-functor interpretation to a fibered category interpretation of a pre-stack. So the pre-sheaves were pseudo-functor interpretations of a pre-stack, and here we've just constructed the additive fibered category version of this pre-stack. And this is something we can do in general, and we can do this on every level. So on every level, we're going to get some category U on the level U, which maps to C U, and some real additive category with an additive topology. And the fact that that C is a stack of modules over U. So I said, I said that C then becomes a category of sheaves of modules. So my C U is going to be the category of modules on U U with respect to this topology I can put there. And the characterization of the Yoneda embedding is going to be that if we make this construction, so we started with this situation. We additivized on all levels. We obtain maps into the different levels of C. Then we need that on every level we're going to get a localization. This was a stack of Grothendieck categories. Important. It has to be a stack of Grothendieck categories. On every level, I want a localization. So localizations C U of mod UU, and the topology, now this time the topology I get induced on, here there are two topologies now. There are two topologies. One topology is inherited from the epimorphic families in C. This gives me an additive topology on U. This is T epi. TC is T epi. Yes, but on the other hand, U also has a topology, which is the topology it has from the fact that it wants to be the stack mod O bar, and this topology from wanting to be the stack mod O bar comes from my topological space, and so maybe I should denote this T X. So there are these two different topologies: one coming from X, one coming from C, and so the point is that they have to be the same. They have to be the same, and this is a point of view that one can lift under deformation. So it will, part of this can be formulated in terms of local projectivity and et cetera, but to make it work, to make it completely work, I had to adopt this point of view. Okay, so I think this more or less finishes the part about the general ring space. So in the remainder of the time, I will come back to the schemes. I will say something about schemes. So for a scheme X, okay, we also have this stack of abelian categories, yeah, X, O, X, not O, X, but we can also consider another stack of abelian categories. I should have corrected some things. So what have we found out so far? That here we should really change to pre-stacks of algebraoids. And actually, even in the commutative setting, we obtain new objects. I wanted to remark. So we have this mod of OX, but we also have a stack of abelian categories, quasi-coherent, sheaves, where this stack given on U will be the categories quasi-coherent sheaves on OU. I need some assumptions on my scheme now. So I want, for example, these to be Grothendieck categories. So I'd better take some assumption like that the scheme is quasi-compact separated. Let us say that the scheme is quasi-compact separated. We have this stack of Grothendieck categories, and so I would like to. I would like to see what the relation is between the deformations of this mod of O and the deformations of this. What is the relation between these two? But we already know that these deformations are given by this pre-stack, but now from this pre-stack of this algebraic pre-stack in the scheme case, maybe I should note first that things become really easier, because this whole story about being able to lift objects locally, I mean, in these situations we have a preferred subposet of the opens of X. Preferred subposets of affine opens. And on these affine opens, these obstructions will always vanish. So it's no longer the case that for different deformations we're gonna get something on different coverings. No, we can always use these affine coverings to make things work. And so in particular, this pre-stack of algebraoids we're gonna get for a scheme. When we restrict this to this U, it's gonna be really a pre-stack of algebraoids, in the sense that on every affine open, the value is gonna be a real algebraoid. Okay? And, that's one thing. And now the other thing is that, I can construct, a fiber category of floating decatables, which I'll denote ads of O, and ad of O, I'm going to put just the category of modules of O of U. So now I put the category of modules, and on this restriction U, this is the same, this is precisely the definition of the quasi-coherent stack. And so since this is so, I mean, the stackification of this one is really going to give me the stack of quasi-coherent sheaves. So the stack of quasi-coherent sheaves is going to be a stackification of the fibered category where I put on every open just the category of modules over O of U, right? And now I have deformed O to obtain O bar. And over O bar, I can define a deformed ad fibered category. So I want to look at the deformed ad O bar of U in the same way. And then and now I want to define a category of non-commutative quasi-coherent sheaves. I want to define quasi-coherent sheaves on with regard to U, let's say, or just quasi-coherent sheaves on O bar to be the category of descent data of this ad O bar. So of course on the ground level, my category of quasi-coherent sheaves is precisely obtained as descent data made up out of these modules on affines, and so I just do the same thing on the deformed level. And so in this way, I obtain some kind of a category of quasi-coherent objects, and this is going to be an abelian. A deformation of quasi-coherent sheaves on O as an abelian category, but I really need these assumptions on my scheme to be able to prove a final theorem. So final theorem under assumptions. I will be able to prove that there is an equivalence between deformations of O as an algebraic pre-stack or of O restricted to U as a pre-stack of algebraids, and then the formations of the abelian category of modules, of sheaves of modules on O, and then finally the formations of the abelian category of quasi-coherent sheaves on O. And so all the categories we can associate to a scheme, all these abelian categories have the same deformation theory, really. And maybe just one last word. If coherent sheaves is a good thing to consider, for example, yes, for a Noetherian scheme, say, then it will all also have the same deformation theory. So really, you can pick your favorite abelian category associated to these objects and deform it, and you will get you will get something in a non-commutative world. Thank you. Yes, so I erased my cohomologies, but yes, very, very important. This definition that was here with the X product X, the Swan definition, is the correct cohomology which describes this deformation theory. So if you can compute this, you can. That's the correct thing to compute. So that's also something we've realized now. We've been able to interpret this natural cohomology for schemes in terms of deformations. Yes. Aha. They are very much the same. I think they are really the same because of the way you can induce deformations on localizations. So basically, every time I have a deformation only of my category of quasi-coherent sheaves, I will be able to produce deformations of the quasi-coherent sheaves on my other subsets.
But what about the other direction? If you have a deformation of the
scheme, yes. Yes. Once again, I use flatness very much in this. Loose flatness.
When you have a deformation of the stack and you take the global section, is it still flat?
That's a delicate point, and that's why I need hypotheses on my scheme for various reasons, and so that's maybe something that should be made very clear, that I only state this equivalence, and I mean also for with the stack of quasi-coherent sheaves, with restrictions on my scheme, because in general I won't be able precisely what you say. I won't be able to obtain flatness for the glued objects I construct. So for a general scheme, this is something I haven't figured out. I mean, this seems like a nice definition of quasi-coherent sheaves in general. I mean, saying you take this stack of additive, this add stack, and then taking descent. But it's not clear that this is really the correct thing. It's not clear that this is going to be a deformation, for example, in general. So no. Well, for modules over an algebra, we basically find that this is what we also want, that the theory is the same. So we don't get any new deformations by looking at the category of modules over an algebra. We do get interesting things if we look at, for example, graded algebras. And this is how it originated. Maybe, I mean, so Vandenberg, Bondal, Polichuk, they have constructed, non-commutative versions of specific spaces like P2s, etc. And so there, you're going to get interesting. I mean, if you can plug this into this theory, and then it's going to be the correct framework to interpret your new non-commutative algebras that are classically looked at as non-commutative spaces. They're going to pop up as deformations of the abelian categories. So there you're going to get examples. Right. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.